Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Possibly back with an illness. It's the State of Combat podcast on CBS Sports with the Brian Campbell Mixed Martial Arts Edition in your ear hole. Guys, we are fresh off of UFC 244. So much to talk about. I'm fresh off a trip to Canelo Kovalev in Sin City, and I know what they say. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Unfortunately, it stays in your bloodstream for the next 4 days. So bear with me as I gut out this show. Let's bring in the guys who can actually speak without throwing up. The Hall of Famer, Sugar Rashad Evans.
What's going on, BC? What's going on?
I'm fighting the good fight, Rashad. All right? All right? You know that city. It'll kill you if you let it. It'll take your soul.
It's good you only got sick. That's it. That's a win.
Good thing I didn't get pregnant. All right. Let me bring in Brandon Wise, CBS Sports editor, writer. The 6'5" glass of water. How you doing, B-Wise?
I'm good, BC. It's, you know, you're sick when you can't get off of your normal intro for me correctly. So we're gonna get through this together.
All right. This is CBS Sports. This is the State of Combat, and this is your MMA edition. Please, if you want to support our show, head on out to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Do all that 5-star review jazz. But I'm not gonna waste any time here, folks, because I don't know how long my voice will last. We got a lot to get into, such a big weekend of action, and the headlines spinning forward. So why don't we start off right there? 244, guys, over the weekend. New York, Madison Square Garden, BMF. I happened to watch it because I was sitting in MGM Grand Garden Arena in Vegas for Canelo Kovalev, and DAZN made this unprecedented decision to hold off the main event and put the damn show up in the arena above the rafters. This show delivered. Holy crap.
No, it really did. It was one of those ones that, you know, and it's rare. You know, sometimes you get these fights that are so hyped up and it just doesn't live out. But this one played it out all the way through to the end, even with the drama at the end, setting up another fight and another BMF match. I mean, this is a win. The president was there. I mean, come on. It couldn't get bigger than that.
The Dwayne The Rock Johnson there to put the BMF title around the waist. Look, I had said coming in that I didn't think they maybe had the – okay, they had the right two guys because Diaz and Masvidal are just badass BMFs. But they might not have had the right combination of personalities who could bring the – sort of the outrage upon each other. Sort of like, did they mesh in terms of one playing the heel, one playing the baby face just to try to get us fired up? That didn't end up happening, but I didn't anticipate, guys, what did happen, right? Aside from the great fight and the violence and the controversial ending and all that stuff we're going to get into, from the idea of just BMF and how absurd this was and how, like, as a fan, you're like, this is a gift to us. I did not expect once they got in that cage and Buffer's announcing them how much I would get the feels for each of their respective journeys to get here and how much... You know Masvidal's story, and even Nate at the weigh-in getting to introduce his brother, Nick Diaz, as the greatest fighter of all time, and Nick walking him down. And it was like, we knew this was a unique sort of graduation situation for both those guys because they've been so real that they were real back when the company hated them, and they're still real that the companies realized they got to come around to support them. And I kind of popped for that. Did you catch those feels?
Yeah, I definitely caught those feels, you know, and just the magnitude of what this, you know, the BMF thing, it kind of, you know, brought in a different feeling that, you know, no belt has brought in for a while, you know, and that was really refreshing to see. And, you know, evident of that is just the people who were just in attendance who just had to be there. You know, it's been a long time since there's been a UFC or a fight event in that nature where people are like, you know, I don't know where I have to be, but I need to be there. And, you know, people show it out for the fight. And that goes to show that both of these guys, they do have the star power. And, you know, the UFC is right to get behind both of these guys because, you know, they're super hot right now, especially Masvidal.
Yeah, damn right. Wow, Masvidal is super hot right now. Let's get into this fight. It was a 5-round welterweight bout. BMF title on the line. You may have thought that was insanely awesome. You got The Rock there. It's pro wrestling in your face in a real fight. You may have thought it's lame. Either way, I'd said last week that these are the right two guys from the violent standpoint, from the standpoint of this is going to be a real fight, meaning they're fighting for the purest of terms, right? Like, yeah, there's money at stake in future fights and BMF for what it's worth, you know, although they did put 50 grand into that belt. I would have liked some barbed wire on it, something a little bit different than the Power Ranger look, but that's fine. But look, in the end, for as long as this lasted, and that was 3 rounds, these guys were willing to fight to the death. And I say that respectfully. They were willing to just fight through whatever it took. And I sat there at ringside waiting on Canelo. Canelo laid on that couch with his gloves on watching the same thing. And these guys delivered a hellacious fight. First round could be your round of the year. It was hellacious. Nate with cuts below and above his right eye. Bad cuts that eventually led to that stoppage. But Brandon, you have been day one-ish on Masvidal's resurgence here. You bought the three-piece and a soda t-shirt off some bootleg website. That's your boy. And, you know, I'll take L's, man. I'll sit on the L. I mean, that would probably hurt a little bit, but I'll sit on the damn L when I need to. I didn't realize, even with the knockout of Till, even with the luck/perfection knockout of Askren, I didn't even realize Masvidal was this good. I picked Nate Diaz to win a 5-round decision. And you can argue with the stoppage on the cut. We'll get to that in a second. Whether he could have rallied to do that, I don't think so, but whatever. But you know what I learned about this fight? That Jorge Masvidal is super necessary. He's super elite because he took Nate Diaz apart in round one. So shout out to your boy. Shout out to South Florida. Shout out to people like you who live on the tip of that peninsula.
It was just like, my overarching takeaway was like, he outstruck a volume striker. And that's just insane to me. Like, he took apart a dude who's known for just getting in your face with his pressure and then just throwing everything he's got at you and making it so that you have to think and then you have to react. And he outstruck him. It was crazy. And the power with which he was landing was just amazing to watch, because every time he clipped Nate on the head, you could see Nate's head moving. And you don't normally see it like that, because even when Connor fought him, he was clipping him, but he wasn't touching him like that.
Rashad, what's the difference between the Jorge from 2 years ago at Madison Square Garden that got picked apart for 3 rounds by Wonderboy Thompson and looked like he wasn't fit for the elite, and that guy in round one on Saturday night who landed that insane combination and was putting it on Nate? Like, stylistically, technically, what are you seeing that's different?
I think more than anything is just his confidence. Now he believes, you know, I think he's always had a skill level, but I think, you know, now he's starting to believe in the skill level. You know, sometimes you get a lot of tools in your toolbox, and, you know, learning which tools to work and which tools work best for you is the skill that actually makes you reach that ultimate perfection level that you see right now. That's happening right here. Now he's finding his stride because he knows what tools work for him. He knows how to tell the story of the fight that he wants to have. And I think that's something that you don't see a lot of fighters who are in that space where they kind of are trying to find their fighting style. They don't know how to tell the story of how they want the fight to go from the beginning to the end. And I think that he does a really good job of telling that story, starting off the fight with some leg kicks, starting off the fight with some good movement, start off the fight with just really good, crisp, technical, powerful striking that really showed the flaws that you see in Nick Diaz's game that you, Nate Diaz's game that you don't really see too often, you know? And that's something that, you know, that's just that belief that he had. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that, you know, he took some time off and he just kind of trained and got his mindset around his skill level. And now we're seeing the fruits of that labor.
Yeah, let's dig back into that. He took that time off. And Brandon, you and I sat down with him that time at ATT ahead of what, the Askren bout, when he wasn't really doing many interviews. And he talked about it, but I didn't really center my focus on it, that he was on that reality show in Latin America, like, what, a year and a half ago? And it was some kind of Survivor-type deal where he's, like, in the woods, and he really had that time to take stock of everything. And if you think about it at that point, he's in his early 30s. He's kind of flirted with the journeyman label, and it was there where he claims he, you know, came up with this idea that I'm going to baptize folks and I'm just not going to care anymore. But I'm taking it as it was his moment to realize, like, I'm going all in on my career. Like, you can frame it nicely with the I'm going to baptize people from now on, but doesn't that mean more like I'm going to train my hardest, I'm going to believe in myself full throttle? This part of the story is very inspirational.
Yeah, and it's – I don't even know how to frame that the way that you're saying, because it's like the way that people were talking about him before this year was like he's a blown-up lightweight who we don't really know what his true weight class is, what his power is, what carries over into 170, because he didn't look the way that he's looked this year at 170 in the past. So I hope that this maintains. I hope that what you're saying is true about the belief in himself is just carrying him through this, and that he actually doesn't have that fear anymore, mm-hmm. and that he's just able to go in there and just know what his best abilities are and perform well, because that's what fighters need. And if he can carry that, there's no stopping him.
This reminds me of when I was in college, right? When I wrestled Greg Jones, it was like towards the end of my senior year. And, you know, I was losing, not being consistent in my wrestling. I was pretty good, but I wasn't consistent in my wrestling. And the reason why I wasn't consistent was because I was trying to wrestle the Big Ten style, which is like a really heavy banging, you know, you go really, really, like, it's just a rough style. But I was more like a finesse type of style wrestler, you know, moving around, dancing, that kind of thing. So I was losing, not being consistent, and I had my last few matches, and I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to wrestle the way I feel, the way I feel, and just let it out and just have fun. And when I did that, I was beating people that I shouldn't have beat. One is Greg Jones, you know, the guy who was supposed to win the whole NCAA tournament. And that's what reminds me of Masvidal, that moment where he said he's going to start baptizing folks. It was just like, you know what? I don't want to play nobody else's game but my own. I want to fight my own style. And you see that the way he moves, the way he has that slickness to the way, you know, he steps up to the combination and you don't know what he's going to do. You know, that's his style. And until he found that style, you know, he wasn't feeling that confident. But a guy who's found his style is confident in anybody who steps in the octagon with him, and that's what we have in Masvidal.
Yeah, shout out to Greg Jones, like you mentioned, the three-time NCAA Division I champion at West Virginia, only lost to three men in college, one of those, Sugar, Rashad Evans. Rashad, talk to me specifically about what Masvidal did mention, the idea that there was fear in cardio, that, like, now we're seeing him put 100% of himself into training. But, do you identify with that? Like what is he really talking about there?
Well, there's a fear that happens. If you ever gas out in a fight, it is the worst feeling in the world, because you feel like you're on an island and you're waving for help and everybody is just watching you, but no one can help you. And it's up to you to get back to safety to make sure you can compete for the next round. And it's the most desperate feeling in the world. And you feel like you're the most vulnerable in the world. You hate that feeling. So there becomes a fear around it, and especially if you make it through a fight where you are extremely gassed, you know, there's a big fear around it. So you, after that, you always kind of in the back of your mind hold out a little bit of energy just in case you might gas, because it becomes a fear. But holding out a little bit of energy, it makes you gas in the beginning, because you're clenching and you're not tight. And when you flow, that's when you're not expending too much energy. But when you're thinking about getting tired, you most definitely will get tired. So I think what he did was he just took the brakes off, he took the fear off of that and just went to the extreme with his cardio, put himself in energy deficits in training where he knows he's not going to be in a fight. And that way he was able to build his confidence in training, so that that way he knew he can go as hard as he wanted to at any pace in a fight and not have the fear of gassing.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense right there. As that fight rolled on, of course, we saw Nate make a bit of a comeback in round three when I thought it was pretty clear he lost those first two rounds one-sided. But you got to give Nate credit for being who he always is, which is a tough SOB, because the combination that floored him and cut him in round one would have stopped just about anybody, because Masvidal was so on point. And you see Nate gutting it out, doing Nate stuff. I mean, just the interplay between them guys during this fight was like as fun and refreshing as I've ever seen, right? The smiles at each other, the Masvidal faking the flying knee off the opening set, Nate getting up after getting beat down and going right back into that swagger. Like, this was fun theater, again, in the purest form of just like, we're badasses. Really the spirit of the BMF. And I think from the standpoint of did it live up to what they were trying to do with the BMF, I thought it exceeded it. But within this third round, was Nate really coming on, in your thoughts?
I don't think so, just because he still had such a strong, sharp fighter in front of him. I think if he would have been able to, you know, like he did, you know, he put some pressure on Masvidal in the third and really started to use the game plan, which I thought he was going to use, that wall and brawl and type of, you know, that gumming up game that he's really good at. I thought if he would have done that a little bit earlier and a little bit more concisely all the way through the third round, I would have said, okay, there may be a swing about to happen. But I just didn't see Masvidal fading at all. And it seemed to be that, you know, the key things that had him get ahead in the fight were not going to be stopped. And I mean, the leg kicks and all the things that, you know, the fast combinations. And I don't think that was going to be stopped by anything that Diaz was going to throw. So I just think it may would have got a little bit worse for Diaz.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that at all. The stoppage, I get why there was initial controversy, right? It's a BMF fight and you're stopping it due to the kind of cut that, like, we've recently seen in Nevada, Tyson Fury, the boxing heavyweight champion, go through something much worse. Nate's posting pictures of the same cut in the same spot he had against Anthony Pettis and fought through it. But there's a couple of things in play that I think people need to realize. One, that the New York State Athletic Commission is as stringent as, I mean, they get a lot of criticism, but they're as nervous and as stringent as possible right now for a reason. And that reason is the Magomed Abdusalamov heavyweight boxing unfortunate situation from like 6 years ago where he lost to Mike Perez. And then there was some mishandling in his treatment after the fight and he collapsed and he went into a coma. And that was a monster lawsuit and a monster hit against their reputation. So they've been very tight since then. I mean, even in that Deontay Wilder, Luis Ortiz boxing heavyweight championship bout a little more than a year ago, Wilder got rocked in one round and almost stopped. In the next round, they stopped the fight, took 15, 20 seconds to make sure Wilder was okay and let the doctor look at him. And the crowd's booing, like, you know, you're giving them a chance to recover. But, I mean, look, New York's tight. New York, they didn't even let Pearl fight that time. Remember your girl, Pearl, Brandon? They didn't even let her fight that time. So I get that. But anybody that's going next level and, like, harassing this doctor online, like, are you friggin' kidding me? Nate was going to go down a dark road, and the fact that they stopped it when, even, I get he's rallying, and he was rallying to a certain degree, but I had really in my heart, like, no issues with that stoppage because he was going to take hella damage from there on out.
I totally agree with that, just because of the simple fact of this, you know, you have Diaz who has a heart of a lion and he would go out on the shield every single time. But every single fight is not that situation, and you can't have every single fight be that situation, even though you may want it to be. Now, look here. He didn't get the win. He got the doctor stopped it. But what did he get? He gets a berth into another fight with the same guy, and now he gets to come and bring his game and now take notes of what he didn't do well in this fight. You know, maybe he'll check some leg kicks. You know what I'm saying? But now. Now he has another chance, and he didn't take too much of a beating to his brand. He's still interested. You know, both of those guys, you know, they both won that fight. And it's really rare to have a fight like that with that magnitude with both of these guys still coming out winning and people still wanting to see that again, you know. And it's just, you know, they couldn't have had a better outcome. And far, as crazy as it sounds, That was magic that happened. You know, was a rare thing, and it was a magic that happened because, you know, what it gave birth to. BMF belt, I don't know what it's going to become, but it feels like something that can be a thing. It can be a thing.
Well, look, both were elevated, like you said, which is true. If they want to go down the road of the BMF being a thing, which I'd said since the beginning, I kind of think it should, because fans love the crap out of this. And there's a whole subsection of BMF style fighters that we love that really aren't title potential guys. Like they put their head above water at one or two times in their career and enter that conversation, but they may not get there. And this is sort of a way to, I don't know, recognize and love them. And look, UFC loves it. They're the ones who have been given out bonuses for knockouts from the beginning. Like, UFC loves this. But Rashad, even though both fighters said after the fight they would do a rematch because of the the somewhat inconclusive nature of the stoppage, although I think the further we get from it, we realize Masvidal had basically won that fight. Dana doesn't like it. And the more I sit here and think about it, like within 5 hours after that fight, I'm like, yeah, let's do a rematch. This is great. BMF title can live on. This is perfect. Everybody wins. Now I'm sort of like, wait, Masvidal is the better fighter here. The stoppage was fine. What else would this guy have to do to not get a title shot? And yeah. Is his star so bright right now that you'd be doing a disservice to your own business by not giving him the winner of Usman Covington?
No, it's true. It's definitely true. But I think there may be another BMF fight out there for him. And I think it may be a big money BMF fight. I think Conor McGregor's trying to enter the BMF conversation, you know, and I think that would be perfect timing for a Masvidal BMF two with somebody, you know. I think that could happen. I think that's something interesting because, you know, here's what I like about the BMF is that and whenever we used to have our fights, right before we fought, we would go into the back room and then Dana White, they would have a talk, and they would really just have a talk about, you know, what the bonuses would be, but it was pretty much all about just laying it on the line and who was going to lay it on the line. And you see some guys just take to it. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to lay it on the line. But then you see some guys that's on the proverbial bubble of their career and don't want to take that third loss. And they're like, man, I want to lay it on the line, but I need to get this win because I don't want to lose my contract. I think the whole BMF genre of fights can give birth to those guys who just want to go out there and fight and put on a show, win, lose, or draw, and just give the fans something that they're like, this is the sport I want to watch. I think that it can give birth to that, you know, and I think that, you know, Masvidal can carry that flag for a while. But of course, you know, we can move him to, you know, a title fight or whatnot. But his star is hot. You know, he's got a different kind of star power right now, you know, being part of the whole BMF thing and having a president tweet his name out and all those different things. You know, these are the kind of things that make someone that star level like a McGregor.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is the spirit of the BMF.
Let me bang with somebody. Let somebody stand up and bang with me.
We've long said that, like Conor is like the only thing. When somebody's so deserving of a title shot, if they enter the Conor conversation, that's like the perfect substitute because Conor brings so much money and attention that it would be a title shot. But Brando, do you tend to agree with what Masvidal said post-fight where he's like, are you guys trying to get this kid killed? That if Conor put on the big boy pants and balled up for a Masvidal fight, that with the way Jorge's operating right now and all the questions surrounding Conor with just one fight in the last 3 years, that you can't win, bro?
No, I don't. How is Conor going to beat him? Because to me, Jorge does everything he does just better at 170. And he feels like a natural 170 now. Like when we talked about him before, we were like, oh, he might just be going up the 15 pounds because he doesn't really want to cut the weight. Now he actually looks like he's built for the weight class. We still don't know what Conor is because Conor still wants to be a 155er. And we've seen him at 170 against Nate. And he just doesn't look like he still has the same gas tank because he's not staying as in cardio shape because he's trying to put on more muscle. So I just don't see how he has a path to win if that fight's at 170.
See, here's my thing on it. I'm kind of like this about Conor. Like I kind of feel like, you know, y'all must have forgot a little bit because.
Here's
the thing about it. Listen. Conor has gotten himself into a lot of trouble. Conor has been a knucklehead or whatever the case may be. But I will say this: it's really hard to count Conor out because of what Conor has done to be in his position to make us know Conor who he is. There's many times where I didn't think Conor was going to be able to hold anyone's jock strap inside the octagon, but he came through and he delivered. So I don't want to just put him out of the conversation saying that he can't hang, because this is when Conor's at his best, when he's tried like this, when he's in a position like this. So he might still have a couple more fantastic fights in him. Now, with all that said, Jorge is on another level right now. So he would be fighting at a ridiculous, you know, level up than he has in a long time. But I like this challenge for him because I think this could bring back the Conor that so many people fell in love with.
Well, he knows it would be a striking fest, which he would enjoy, and it wouldn't be a, you know, wrestle fest. But I love the Roy Jones shout out there from Rashad. When I beat Bernard Hopkins and won the IBF, the right was hurt, beat him with the left. Y'all must have forgot. But the counter to that is This ain't featherweight Aldo, right? You know, this is welterweight Jorge Masvidal. And like I said, I was even slow coming around realizing what we have here. Not just the funny backyard fighter who's winning fights. We've got a super elite guy. I do love the idea of, well, this would bring out everything that's inside of Connor. But Connor showed in the last fight, man, that inactivity is not helping him. And I'm going to be honest. I doubled down on Connor heading into that Khabib fight because I believed in that magic that had been there throughout his initial rise. That idea that, like, he shouldn't win this. But he also shouldn't have won the last four, right? Like, there's something there. That magic's gone in my heart until he can prove that again. So I couldn't see him doing anything but getting hurt here. It'd be interesting. Then again, go watch UFC 202 all over again at welterweight, and Connor did bang for five rounds and came out on top. So it's an interesting, Brandon, it's interesting. It's interesting, bro. It would sell. Oh, hell yeah, it would sell.
Can we get to the fun topic that you and I keep yelling at each other about?
Oh, we'll
please?
Get there. Brandon, I'm wearing a freaking bathrobe. I'm sick as balls, all right? You're lucky I'm on the show, okay? Seriously. All right, back to the fun topic. Rashad, can you mediate here? Can you set the damn record straight in this court trial that we're about to have here? You can call this the people's court if you want here. Let's get serious about it.
The truth. No sense. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit, you must acquit. Son, my turn.
All right, Rashad. Dana White and Brandon Wise of the CBS Sports State of Combat podcast, and many other broskies, Brent Brookhouse of CBS Sports, Chuck Mendenhall of many outlets, say that with this victory, Jorge Masvidal, BMF champion, is a slam dunk. He has locked it up. He is your 2019 Mixed Martial Arts Fighter of the Year. Here's what I'm saying, Rashad, and I want you to split this difference. And Brandon, if you need to jump in and give your side before Rashad settles it, that's fine. Jorge has had a tremendous year, right? I mean, knocked out Till. Friggin' sent Askren to the deep, dark depths. And then went in there against Nate on a grand stage and lived up to the expectations. So if you're telling me he's reached the ceiling of what you can do in fight of the year credibility without actually winning a legitimate title, and at the ceiling for him is number two overall in the fighter of the year belt, I'm like, yes, he's in this conversation. If you lean his way, I don't hate it. I'm not here to say that Masvidal isn't deserving of being in this conversation. But I'm also here to tell you that there's like levels to this conversation. And I don't see how you could possibly look at what Israel Adesanya has done this year and then just be like, that's cool, but I'm in love with the three-piece in a soda. I'm in love with Jorge. Because here's the deal about Adesanya. He won the middleweight championship by knocking out a pound-for-pound ranked guy in a giant setting. Oh, yeah, and he was also in the fight of the year like 3 months before that and won against a super elite performance from Gastelum. And, oh, yeah, if you just want to sprinkle some more resin on top of this bong, he also beat Anderson Silva, a legend. Now, I'm not leaning on that for the argument, but it's part of the conversation. So, Rashad, when I go to figure out who's the fighter of the year in any sport, sometimes if you have that one big win that meant the most, it means the most. Like, I'm here to tell you that Israel Adesanya's win over Whitaker, it might be like the second best win of the year for anybody. I mean, Stipe's knockout of DC is pretty damn big. And do you remember 2015? Floyd beats Pacquiao, but then he F's around in his retirement fight and beats a guy who shouldn't have been there, and Andre Berto. And suddenly there's this hipster argument like, yeah, you know what? F that fight. Canelo's our fighter of the year. He beat Lara. He knocked fools out. He did this. He did that. And then people had to wake up and go, hey, bro, I don't care if you thought the Pacquiao fight was boring. That fight was one versus two, pound for pound, and for the whole damn ball of wax, and Floyd won it. He's your friggin' fighter of the year. Get over yourself. I'm here to tell you that Israel Adesanya has the strongest case of being. What else would anyone have to do than what he just did and not be the fighter of the year. He launched himself into the pound-for-pound conversation. He might be the next Anderson Silva. He knocked out a pound-for-pound rated guy, and he's also a world champion. And shout out to Amanda Nunes. She may skirt into this conversation. Skirt's a bad word there, but you get what I'm saying. Shout out to people on Twitter hitting me up going, hey, how are you going to have this conversation and not bring up Pitbull from Bellator? Dude knocked out Chandler and holds two belts in the conversation. Masvidal's going to be number two for me in the end. But Brandon, he can't win it. You can't win. I'm sorry.
Nah, I totally agree with you, man. I definitely think that, you know, Israel has went out there and proved that he is without a doubt head and shoulders above he is the biggest star in the UFC. I mean, you know, just his fighting alone is just one thing, but you get the feeling like you're watching something really, really special when you watch him do anything, you know, and the way he believes and his cues are just, you know, what he says on camera is just on point. It's just on point. I'm not saying that Masvidal don't have that, but when it comes to just, you know, who had the bigger schedule, who achieved more, it's definitely, you know, Israel. Israel has it all day. I mean, a big shout out to Masvidal, you know, what he's done and the way he's turned around things and made people, you know, turn his name into a household name. You know, the first time I met Masvidal was with one of my old wrestling coaches back in the day at Jackson's gym, you know, and he was coming out there and, you know, he was just a scrappy guy back then. You know, we can tell he had talent, but he was just a scrappy guy. And to watch where he's grown from that is remarkable, because you never would have thought he would have become that guy. At that point, he was just a journeyman type of style fighter. And now he's grown into this guy. So I'm with you all day. I'm with you all day, BC. I think you're 100% correct.
Shout out to Kamaru Usman. If he beats Covington, he'll also be in this conversation. I don't know if I'd give him the nod. But, Brandon, I want to give you a chance to defend yourself, because a lot of people agree with you, and you claimed you were going to come on this podcast and baptize me over this. So, hey, bro, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you for giving me the floor after your four-minute diatribe there. I just feel like the quality of the performances needs to be a factor in this, because – Jorge was supposed to be the B-side when he fought Darren Till in London. Like, he went to Darren Till's backyard and did that to him in a second round knockout and just looked fantastic. Like, he got bullied in the first round of that fight where Till was trying to just throw his weight around and push him into the fence. And he rallied and he put it on him, man. Then he goes into International Fight Week as the third fight on that card, because he wasn't a title fight. And you could argue that that fight had the most heat on it all week. Right, BC?
Yes.
You could argue that was the fight fans were most looking forward to.
The people's main event, as Ariel Helwani would say.
And he does that. Now, I've called it random. I've called it, like, really hard to predict. But he still did something that nobody's ever done in the UFC. A five-second flying knee knockout. Then he headlines what is arguably the biggest pay-per-view event of the year for UFC. The one that had the most casual attention, definitely, with the president showing up. The Rock showing up and multiple, like, just insane amount of people trying to follow what was going on, and takes apart Nate Diaz, who was arguably one of their biggest stars coming into that fight. So you're telling me
it's a great story.
You're just, I mean, I just don't think that Israel's performances have been that level.
Oh my God.
Oh my God, bro. To eat your tongue.
What are you talking about?
What?
Bobby Knuckles? Are you kidding me? Dude, we favored Robert Whittaker ahead of that fight. He was number 4 or 5 pound for pound, unless you're an a-hole.
It was an even betting fight. What are you talking about?
Right, because Israel's badass, and he just walked through Gaslam in the fight of the year. He actually went to Hades and came out unflamed, bro.
I don't believe it. I mean, the Anderson Silva fight does have to factor into this.
It's sprinkle on top. And by the way, he won. He won against a legend. I'm not leaning on that fight.
Bread.
If he didn't, here's the deal. If the Gastelum fight never happened, and my argument was, hey, Izzy beat Silva, Izzy beat Whitaker, I'm still saying Israel's got an argument there, but I could get where you're going to argue that. All right. But no, he's got are you going to sit here and act like the Gastelum fight wasn't like,
what did Kelvin Gastelum look like this weekend, BC?
Oh, you can't. That can't be part of the argument, because he was
what
he.
Isn't that part of the argument against Jorge when he beat Darren Till, and then Darren Till comes back and looks like this?
Okay, two things here. One, Kelvin Gastelum fought like a champion that night in April in Atlanta. Two, Maybe he got damaged from that performance. Okay, that's what I'm going to say. Okay, maybe.
Darren Till was coming off of 3 straight knockout losses.
I don't think it was 3. It was 2.
Really?
Okay. Look, good win for Darren Till. That doesn't really factor into this conversation, though.
Okay, that's fine.
And this is not against you, Brandon. It's not I see the tears rolling up. It's not a personal attack, all right? How high should we put Pitbull? That this dude on Twitter reminded me, got up in my face, and I was like, you know what, bro, you're right. You're damn right. Pitbull's a badass.
He's probably 3 right now.
Yeah, I think he's definitely up there. You know, Chandler's a beast. Chandler's a beast, and to be able to do here to Chandler, you know, he's up there. Yeah,
and then against Juan Archuleta too.
Yeah.
Shout out to Jeff Cole Jr. at IamJeffCole_131 for the shout out there for Pitbull. All right. We got a lot more to talk about on this show. Masvidal, BMF taking up a lot of our thing there. Before we take a break though, Jorge's calling out Canelo. Can we just keep moving on? Can we stop? Can we stop with this crap? Yeah.
Nobody should be calling out Canelo.
Right? Canelo made $35 million on Saturday because he's in like this Floyd zone of popularity and all that, and DAZN throwing around stupid money to try to make an imprint in boxing. And yes, Jorge Masvidal is getting severely underpaid. What did he get paid, Brandon? What was the tally?
I think it was like $500,000.
And even if there's extra bonuses
he's probably got
sponsors.
Probably got $1 million backstage bonus. So he probably got walked away with that like 1.5.
Okay, so even if that's the case, he's severely underpaid, okay? Because boxers, I mean, Sergey Kovalev got $12 million on Saturday, okay? So, yeah, he's severely underpaid. So you would get why he's doing this. You would get why Habib's dad's on Instagram and Russian is putting out talking more about this Habib Floyd fight. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want it in my life. And by the way, October expired without Dana giving us the Zuffa boxing update, Brandon, okay?
I told Jack on Saturday, I thought that the whole Rock press conference on Friday was going to be the Rock as like that secret guy that has this whole boxing plan.
Rock is the boxing commissioner for Zuffa. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Instead, it's the Mark Kerr biopic, which, by the way, like, shout out to the smashing machine Mark Kerr. This is probably going to be great. If Dwayne Johnson's going to play Mark Kerr in this movie, it'll probably be fantastic. But unfortunately, most of people like heard that announcement. They were like, oh, OK, Dwayne, that's cool. That's cool.
He's going to headbutt so many people.
Thanks for showing up. Yeah, by the way, last night I went, because I'm ill, I went and watched all of Mark Kerr's UFC fights over again, including the one at UFC 15 when the Just Bleed guy came out. That was fantastic. All right there. Hey, we're going to talk about much more from last weekend, preview what's coming up this weekend, and we're going to do that after a word from our friends and sponsors. Yeah, all right. Dig it.
I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to the Planet Premier League podcast. Each week, Cesc Fabregas, Nader Manua, and myself talk all things Premier League.
As a player, you don't have time to talk. No. You don't have time to make a plan. You just need to deal with wave after wave after wave.
We watched Coach Carter, and he said, afterwards, the game's just about doing this for your teammates. And I remember looking around halfway through the film, and half the squad was asleep.
Planet Premier League. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS, here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not Linda got here.
Walking to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching, these have been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. BC, Sugar Rashad Evans, B-Dubs coming back at you. Broskis, let's round up what else we saw at UFC 244. We mentioned it. Darren Till moving up to middleweight. Somewhat of a desperate situation. Dana White said don't do it. Coming off a two-fight losing skid of knockouts. Moves up to face a Kelvin Gastelum from his performance against Adesanya. I'm like, look, I'm sorry. Gastelum's going to walk him down and finish him. And flips the script entirely. And wins a very technical decision over 3 rounds. But Rashad, Till, who I was never high on, thought he was sort of the second-rate, maybe Conor McGregor that UFC forced into a position he didn't earn, then comes out and wins my heart by being like, here's the deal, folks. I was just in that locker room considering faking an injury to get out of this fight, and I just walked down and beat my demons. That's a face turn right there. Darren Till's on my list now. I love the guy. What a performance, Rashad. That's real. That's friggin' real as ish.
Yeah. And this is the Darren Till that I will watch on video. You know, watching him, just getting to know who he was. I seen him on film and I'm like, man, this guy moves really, really good. But then when he fought, he didn't fight it the same. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that he was cutting so much weight. But now it looks like he's gotten to the right weight and he can fight at that energetic level and the level that he is best at. What I like most about this fight was the fact of how Darren Till was able to draw in Calvin Gastelum and then spring out and then hit him with combinations. And his combination striking was so crisp and just the bounce on his feet. Till has a nice natural bounce on his feet. And when he comes in with those combinations, it's pretty devastating. And he has his wrestling impressed me as well. You know, being able to get up, being able to prevent shots. You know, he looked like the bigger fighter in there. And that's one thing that I thought really that was going to be extremely beneficial for him as a fight as he grows into this weight class, because he's going to get bigger, he's going to get stronger, and he's going to be able to use more of his size. And then he still has the attributes that made him a threat at 170, being the speed and being the quickness. You know, those are attributes that the 185 pounders are going to have to get used to. And I think that may be something that that Calvin Gastelum had to get used to too, is just that speed and just that power along with it. You know, he didn't expect Darren Till to be so fast, so powerful, and have great movement. And it was a great surprise, because Darren Till surprised everyone. And, you know, going into this fight, I thought maybe, you know, he had a little bit too much on his plate, you know, psychologically speaking. You know, I thought he was putting too much on there, you know, painting himself into the bat, you know, to a corner that he was going to have a hard time getting out of, just because, you know, whenever you like, I have to do this, I have to win this fight, and you put yourself at the ultimatum state when you have to perform, you're just adding another opponent in there for you to compete against, which is yourself. And he handled that pressure so well. And I think he has given birth to a real contender at this 185 division.
Yeah, I felt like this was a major turning point moment for him. And sometimes you need that on your rise to anything in life. So it was a very human moment. And look, we knew that the size and the talent and all of the things you just said were there. To see it come out, I mean, Brandon, your boy Gastelum was frustrated, man. This wasn't so much a domination of skill or power. It was straight up frustration.
It's frustration, but it's also how Kelvin has fought, man. Like, outside of the Izzy fight, his fights are not exactly the most entertaining, because he's trying to wait for those counter shots way too much. And when he's tentative like that, it becomes a frustrated Kelvin. Like, go back and I know you're going to laugh, but go back and watch that Chris Weidman fight. He didn't look right, man. And it looked like this again tonight, where he felt tentative. And I don't know where you put him now in the rankings or matchmaking, because he can't have that kind of mental block and still be a top five fighter.
I think he'll get it back. You know, here's the thing about it. Whenever you have a big fight like that, there tends to be a hangover sometimes, because it's just like once you climb the top of the mountain and you're just like, oh my gosh, now I got to gear myself up to climb it again. Well, the guy who's already in progress and who hasn't been to the top of the mountain, he has more momentum and he has more enthusiasm to make it to the top of the mountain, because he's never been there. And that's what we have with Darren Till and we have with Calvin Gastelum. Calvin was just there. Now he's trying to build back that feeling of excitement to try to give his best effort in every fight to be worthy of a title shot. And now he got sat down by Darren Till. It's going to take a minute for him to say, okay, I need to recalibrate myself totally all over again, and then refocus, recenter my sights on this championship again. Because if you do not, you're going to be fighting without that extra thing behind you. You're going to be stepping into the octagon with a guy who's looking at you like you're that opportunity. And that's what, then I can say it, speak from my experience, because when I climbed to the top, you know, when I didn't go in there, when I lost and then I went in there with somebody else after, it just didn't feel the same for me. I couldn't get myself up for it. But when you're climbing to the top of the mountain, you get yourself up for every single fight, because you know that that is not your final destination. You know that's just one step along the way, you know. And I think that Calvin has to just recalibrate his mind and get his mind around where he wants to be.
Man, this game and this life we live, it's so freaking mental. It really is 90% mental.
It really is. It really is. When you start diving into it, it's really mental.
I mean, you see so many people accomplish so much at times when you're like, well, that guy ain't that good. And so, I mean, look, you can go back to the Connors rise, man. It was so much of that was just insane confidence and belief in those moments. It's incredible. It's inspiring to some degree. I want to have this conversation now because we're talking about the middleweight title picture. To add on to Adesanya's, by the way, Adesanya was supposed to be on this show this week. I became ill, was unable to interview him, was unable to get words out of my mouth yesterday, so I apologize for that. But Adesanya was all over ESPN, everywhere else, saying what we want to hear. A man of the people, a man after our own hearts. He wants all the smoke. He wants to put his head inside the smoke machine, and he wants Yoel Romero, now that man boy Paulo Costa is hurt, for the next title shot. Brandon, that's like open up a box of Cracker Jacks and you reach down deep and there's a woman in there.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to throw Yoel right back into the title picture again, even after that loss, I mean, I don't care. I'm very fine with this. This is like goes back to that saying that Dana White, where he talks about, it doesn't even matter if our fighters lose because they just know that these kinds of guys are the ones that are going to go in there and bang.
And well, I don't think he lost that fight. That wasn't a loss. That was just a bad decision by the judges. That's what I say. And not to take anything away from Paulo Costa. I mean, he went out there and he fought his heart out. But I believe that Yoel won that fight. And anybody who watched that fight, in my opinion, I thought they thought the same thing. But this call out is something that's a ballsy move, because from what I know about Yoel and from what I know about the people that faced him, they're like, this dude is not human. They say when you hit him, it's like hitting iron. They say it doesn't even feel right. It's like a thud that just doesn't go anywhere. You know, he's not human. So it's interesting that Israel is, he's believing, and this is part of him. This is part of him doing something greater. You know, he fights for that part, you know, that the I want to be something special, you know, and doing something like that, being what you say you want to be, I want to be something special. You have to take fights like this. You have to take fights like against guys that scare the crap out of you, because this is what's going to make him a legend. And I like this call out.
I mean, dude, this is a sick call out. It everything you just said, it's damn, I love that. The case against Romero, like you teased there, is that he's what, is he 1-3 in his last four with two times missing weight? Yet, I thought he beat Whitaker in the rematch. I thought he beat Costa, like you just mentioned. Unfortunately for our Bonaire right now is that, Dana White just spoke with a vlogger called Adam's Apple in the last 12 hours and said, sorry, Romero's gonna have to win a fight first before he's gonna get a title shot. And the problem with that idea is by the time Romero would have won the fight and came back, Paulo Costa would be ready for a title shot. So my question to Dana, to the Sean Shelby's of the world, and to you guys, is if it ain't Romero, who would it be? It's not Darren Till. I mean, he just walked in the middleweight front door. Who the hell is it?
I mean, I think it's going to end up being somebody like Jared Cannonier.
Yeah, I mean, he's not undeserving. But yeah, I get it. I get it. No, I get it. Rashad, you get it, right? I mean, I get it.
I get it. But I like Cannonier, and I would love to see him have a little bit more steam before he gets that title shot, because I think that he's got that bruiser type. I mean, you know what I'm saying? This, if set up right, I can see, you know, it could be George Foreman versus Muhammad Ali. You know what I'm saying? With Israel and a bruiser like Cannonier or Sonny Liston, you know, somebody who can just knock you out when he has that brutal strength and that power that, you know, you haven't seen Izzy face, you know what I'm saying? And can he get past it, you know, because this guy is big, he's strong, and he hits hard, you know, and I think that will be something for Israel if we can build up Cannonier the right way.
If it ain't Karen Nanera, it might be Edmund Shabazian, by the way. No, just kidding. But he's like next in line on the rankings who is not coming off a loss. We'll get to his fight in a second. But you mentioned Sonny Liston, by the way. Showtime has a Sonny Liston doc coming out. I was able to watch it early with a media stream there. Badass doc. You're not going to want to miss this on Liston's controversial life and mysterious death. It'll fire you up. It'll fire you up, all right? All right, thank you. Wow. I love Adesanya. I love what he's trying to do for us. Also on this card this past week, Wonderboy Thompson bounced back in a big way. I certainly picked against him, maybe even bet against him out there in Vegas. Vicente Luque took hellacious strikes in this fight of the night, 3-round welterweight bout. Wonderboy's, he's back.
Yeah, he is. And he showed the patience and the concentration throughout the whole fight, you know. I thought he looked great in the fight with Pettis, but he just had that concentration lapse in the end. And I thought, you know, I thought he kind of picked back up where he was before he got caught with that punch, just kind of with the same, you know, game plan as far as just being really precise and really concise with the strikes and having them, you know. And here's the thing about it. Going against a guy like Luque, who has the ability to just bite on his mouthpiece and go forward and just hit you with whatever you're hitting him back with, you know, that was a great defensive effort on Thompson's part. And just, you know, a willingness to show that, you know, he can go in there and fight a smarter fight against the top grinders in the sport. You know, that was a big, big win for him. So shouts out to him. You know, I trained with Luque for this fight, and you know, Wonderboy was the better fighter with the great movement, and just kept Luque just, you know, guessing all night.
And Brandon, even though Wonderboy married into the Weidman family, it was good to see him not get caught up in the Weidman curse at the moment. Thank you. Hey, Kevin Lee, you guys know, I think he's going to win a world title one day. I think he's friggin' amazing. He doubled down on himself in this fight, going in there against Gregor Gillespie, cutting right back down to lightweight, fighting through a really weird nipple type of situation on his chest, some kind of, remember he had that against Ferguson? What the hell's going on there? And
F.
Yeah, staph infection, and sends Gregor Gillespie to hell via highlight reel knockout. An argument for knockout of the year. Gillespie hits his head on the cage on the way down. And I was watching that fight on pins and needles because Lee's getting lit up at certain times. But you want to talk about going all in to remind us that you're still here. I'm back on the Kevin Lee hype train huge. I don't know if he put it all back together, but he needed this win and he got it.
Yeah, I like it. This is a big win for him, and it just kind of, you know, he's trained at TriStar now. And, you know, the thing about this sport is about believing. And sometimes when you're not in a place where you're feeling that energy, you got to go somewhere else where you can feel the energy. And he found a place in Montreal. And that is a great place because you got the likes of George St. Pierre, you have Faraz Zahabi, you have, you know, so many great fighters, and so many great fighters walk through that door. You know, when you go in there, you're getting the best training. And you see him step into the octagon with that in his mind. Yeah, I train with the best. Yeah, I put in the work. I got that confidence. And that's something you haven't seen Kevin Lee have before in a while. You know, he's had that. Now he has the confidence. I can go. I can go and push myself to the limit. I'm not going to gas out. You know, that's what the Kevin Lee, when he's on that mindset, when he's not afraid to fight the way he can fight, a fear of getting tired, then you have a guy who can land these devastating shots.
I love the confidence, but they're going to have to teach him some defense. In every single fight, he gets lit up. I mean, you know, whether he's fighting Barbosa and he wins, whether he's fighting RDA and he loses, I think he needs a slight change in that regard.
Yeah,
I thought he looked a little bit better in this fight, though, because he was staying low and compact. He was trying to keep his target, like, as minimal as he could. And, I mean, Gregor just looked good as a striker up until he gets his head kicked off.
Do you like Gregor's tat game, Brandon? I'm not moved by it, all right?
I mean, I respect it.
All right. We got to roll on. It's time, Brandon, for you to speak on your boy, the carnival clown himself, Johnny Walker weirdo. I say that as a joke. All respect to Johnny Walker. He had some insane highlight reel knockouts to get to this point. But Rashad and I said last week, man, Corey Anderson could be the test maker, the test man who grinds him down, who takes him down. Oh, he didn't just do that. He sent him to hell in one round, vicious strikes, a cut, and then Corey Anderson went wild afterwards. I was pumped for Anderson because, let's not forget, he tried to get himself into a John Jones title fight at a card show. Dana was like, sorry, dude, you're not that guy. Back off. And now he's basically like, check my resume now. Brandon, I want to sit you up on the big boy chair And what happened here? What happened with your boy?
Dude, it was bad. I mean, Johnny tried to use his weird and awkward style with his angles and stuff, and it wasn't doing anything. Like, Corey was just so patient with his striking. He waited to see the openings, and as soon as Johnny pulled his hand down, it was lights out, because Corey was just so precise with his punches and his kicks that Johnny just never really had a chance. Especially when he's like gets lit up, he tries to stumble down and get into a tie clinch, and Corey was just like, okay, and just started ripping with uppercuts. So you guys nailed it, man. Johnny Walker was not ready for the big bright lights yet. He was not ready for a top three or top four opponent. And Corey Anderson, man, I think if he doesn't get a title shot now, like, I don't know what UFC is doing.
You know what? The true hero in this is Mark Henry, his striking coach. Mark Henry has brought Corey Anderson along so much and really helped him understand striking to now where Corey has become such a great striker because he sees it. Mark Henry, what he does, he calls out plays, and he calls them out during your fight, and you hear him call out a play. And then the play is normally like, you know, your wife's name or your kid's name, but the play will correlate to, like, say, for instance, he say his wife is you say his son's name, and then the combination to his son's name is like a 1, 2, 3. And just by saying his son's name, Corey has a whole combination in his mind. So Mark brings the guys to that level. So you understand combination punching like that. But then, you know, you start to understand what you see out there. And he has become a master of just seeing the openings. And with a guy like Johnny Walker moves so big. And when a guy moves so big, they leave a lot of holes, especially if you stay tight, you stay compact, and you stay in your circle. So when Johnny Walker started reacting so big off of every single thing that Corey was going to do, I knew he was going to get caught with something, because Corey, and part of Mark's game, is to draw you out with a fake, and then it's usually the second or third punch that's going to send you to hell. And that's what happened. Johnny Walker got caught on his back heel, and like Anderson Silva, when you're on your back heel, there's nowhere else you can go. All your weight is on your back heel. You can't move any other way. You just put a stake in the ground, and you just show the guy as far as you can go. All he has to do is follow up, and he can catch you, as you've seen. And that's the problem with a guy like Johnny Walker. All that movement does do good, but it only does good if you can do enough to bring your opponent out to make him make those mistakes.
It's a good breakdown there. I like that. And look, you know, in Johnny Walker's favor, when you get those type of highlight reel wins that are just absurd and it's just coming to you easy, I'm not even sure he knew how good he was. We certainly didn't know. And then you get in there with a guy who is prepared for it and can handle it. So I want to live in a world, I always say it, where losses are a positive. They teach you, or you're not buried. Oh, Johnny Walker's been solved. No, he really, you know, he's going to be able to bounce back from this. Hopefully he will. But Corey Anderson now is on a run where, if you asked me right after that fight, is he a title contender? I'd be like, well, hold on. But then you look at his resume. He beat that barista, Patrick Cummins, but then wins over Glover Teixeira, Beefy Latifi, and now Johnny Walker. He's making a move at it. I think Dom Reyes is probably going to get it, maybe a tiny bit more deserving. He's also in that Toyo Tires commercial, which shows you that usually is a path to the top. But Corey Anderson in this conversation now, Brandon. Somebody get John Jones up in the bullpen. Yeah, yeah.
John needs a fight, man. Plain and simple. He needs a fight, and he needs to stop talking like he's not actually going to fight any of these guys.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you call
him. Here's the thing about a Corey Anderson. You're not. He's very underwhelming. And by that, you know, he does go out there and he is a hard worker and he's overtime, just like the name says. But there's nothing that just draws you to him as far as being like, oh, this is that guy. So he's super hard to prepare for. And when you get in there with him, I promise you, it's like nothing else. The kid has a battery that just goes on, and he can strike, take you down, wash and repeat, and do that ad nauseum and not show any signs of fatigue. And that's something that is rare at that light heavyweight weight class. And if he can go in there and impose that kind of pace and not get caught with some big shots, John Jones has a tougher fight than he would probably anticipate looking at a Corey Anderson on paper.
Wow, getting me fired up. Hey, Brandon, what's this note you have in the run? Dan Hardy saying Johnny Walker was taunting Anderson backstage. Is that why Corey went nuts?
Yeah, there's a lot of weird stuff going around like this that they're saying Johnny was taunting people, and I don't know if I really believe that, but because I just think that Corey was just so excited after the fight because he was leaped on all week for being the guy that's basically the gatekeeper, and then he just knocks him out and let all of that energy out. He nearly headbutted Johnny after the ref stopped the fight when he was being held back, and he did the worm too. So he apologized for all of those antics, but I really kind of wish he didn't, just because he kind of deserved that more than anything.
Well, I mean, fighters handle their nerves differently. Some fighters they act clownish, they fool around, and a lot of that you don't think is nerves because they're acting so boisterous. But a lot of that, sometimes the more boisterous a fighter acts, the more he's trying to mask and try to show he's not as nervous as he is. You know, so that could have been a sign. Now looking back, you know, all these things are a sign, because at the end of the day, I believe it's all mental.
Indeed. A final note on 244 is what I mentioned earlier. The middleweight prospect Edmund Shahbazyan extends his unbeaten record. Highlight real head kick against Brad Tavares. This kid's for real at 21, but did you guys get moved at all by Edmund Tarverdian, the king of head movement, coming to tears after this fight?
I like that. I like that. It shows, you know, he's got a lot of passion. He's put a lot in this kid. You know, this kid I met a few years back in OC, Orange County, and he told me he was going to be in this position. And, you know, he told me about the relationship that he had with his coach, and I thought it was a special relationship back then. And it's just good to see that, you know, a coach is just in a fighter have this kind of connection, because when you see the tears come out, that's just that kid, you're like your son. You know, you put some real work into that kid.
Shout out.
One last note there to Jair Rozenstruik, get the quick knockout of Andrei Arlovsky, and now he's going to be put right back in on December 7th in the main event of UFC DC against Alistair Overeem, because Walt Harris is still they're doing the search for his missing stepdaughter.
Interesting stuff. Before we get into this weekend's preview, real quickly, did you see ONE Championship sent out that note that the entire world apparently watched their most recent card, that 100th anniversary card? They're saying 85 million viewers worldwide, record breaking. can you prove it? I don't know. I mean, this is like insanely. I mean, it's great. It's very impressive, but I don't know. I mean, look, this was everyone's goal, going back to Bob Arum and Zhu Xiuming trying to take over Chinese boxing for a hot second there, and it didn't work out. Everybody is of the idea that if we go to Asia, then, you know, it's just an untapped market. UFC's there right now, but I don't know. Something, I mean, 85 million viewers? China alone bringing in over 10 million live viewers? Then where's the other 75 million? I don't know.
Listen, those Asian numbers are different. You know, who knows? Who knows? Be honest, you know, because I mean, I know that, you know, Ung is a superstar. You know, the Burmese Python, he's a superstar, and I can see it. You know, he's got a huge following that I didn't even really know, because he's such a quiet guy. But you know, I could see some millions and millions of people watching him fight.
Interesting, Brandon. Do you believe it? Be honest. Come on. You're not getting a job with ONE. Don't worry about it. Do you believe it?
No. Apparently, Chashri posted a picture that you could have watched it on the planes that they have over there. Like, ONE Championship was like on demand, or like a live TV option. So maybe they're counting that too.
Are they counting everybody on every plane that was in the sky? I believe him, yo. I don't know. All right. This weekend, we've got a pair of cards. One a little bit more important than the other. But UFC Fight Night Moscow is upon us on Saturday. And hell yeah, this card's interesting, man. This is very interesting. Our main event, featherweight bout, Zabit Magomedsharipov in there against a real banger in Calvin Kattar. Rashad, is this Zabit's final hurdle, should he win it, and this is no gimme fight, to really legitimately entering this title conversation? Because if you told me Zabit Max Holloway was going to happen while I was still alive on this earth in the next year, and I may die from this illness from Vegas, good God, I'd be taking my clothes off.
Yeah, I think this is the final test, you know, that will show and actually bring the attention and show people and get people, as you would say, woke up on Magomed Shapirov, because of the fact that this guy, and he's another one of those Mark Henry guys, is a special, special athlete. I watched this guy do some things that I'd never seen any martial artist do in live sparring. You know, what he does is absolutely amazing, because he's so creative in there and he just has so much fun. And when you watch him train with his with his group of fighters, the Dagestani crew that he rolls with, you know, they have sessions where they just have, you know, just do nothing but just imagination techniques, where they just do a bunch of crazy stuff and they get comfortable doing it, and to the point where it becomes like second nature to do it, you know, and they get the perfect timing down. And, you know, Zabit's one of those guys, you know, watching him train, I really think, you know, he's definitely a world champion one day. He's going to be that guy. But Calvin Kattar is definitely that test to, you know, to show if he is that guy.
Brandon, it's really hard not to look at your boys Zabit and think exactly what Rashad said. Do you think this will be violent, or is Zabit going to be able to control Kattar's offense?
Oh, man, I don't know. I feel like Kattar is a better striker than a lot of people give him credit for. I feel like he's going to come in there with a really good game plan. I also think that the really weird switch from this being in Boston to now being in Russia might have a little bit more impact on Kattar than we think.
Fair point. Dagestan is all over this card, by the way. This is a heavy Habib's boy card. You know what I'm saying?
So, I mean, I think that Kattar will be able to put together some offense and be able to stifle Zabit's striking and submissions a little bit. But I still think that this is a showcase opportunity for Zabit.
Let's talk about – I can't wait for this fight, by the way. Zabit is just screaming title to me. But the co-main event is going to bring a lot of intrigue. Greg Hardy, quick turnaround after that last fight. Who did he fight in the last – oh, against the damn Wombat. And he's going to step up insane levels. Rashad, they say there's levels to this. And Greg Hardy's going from, like, the county fair circuit to the major leagues here against Alexander Volkov, all 6-7 of him, who hasn't fought, of course, since that dramatic knockout loss to Derek Lewis over a year ago, in which he was winning every second of that fight. This is the deep end of the pool, Rashad. And if you're going to ask me straight up what's going to happen, Greg Hardy's going to get his ass kicked. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You got to find out how good you are. But do you think it's time for this?
Yeah, and this is what we talked about when he had the fight, the combat wombat. You know, we wanted to see Greg Hardy tested. You know, I love the energy that Greg brings. And it just seems that he's just missing the dance partner a lot of times, you know, because he goes out there with great energy, but then something normally weird happens, and you don't know if it's weird happens because a guy is almost as novice as he is, or just because, you know, weird stuff always happens when he fights. We don't know.
Or if he's a damn cheater, that like some people think. We don't know.
We just have to figure out what that is. But I believe in a kid, and I really, really believe in his upside, as the UFC does. And I think this is a perfect test for him because, you know, Volkov is a battle-tested, tough guy who's talented in many different areas. And if he can get past this guy, he can really put a stake in the ground and say, yeah, I'm that dude at heavyweight. Come and see me.
Yeah, this is a real all-or-nothing opportunity. Now, Brandon, could Greg Hardy F around and knock him out in the first round? Absolutely. He has plus athleticism, real power. But when I look at this fight, Volkov is a point fighter. He's a kickboxer. He's smart. He's got size and length and controls distance well. Go back and look at what he did against Derek Lewis until the dramatic stoppage at the end. I don't see any scenario but Greg Hardy getting picked apart and then completely gassing out and then maybe having a Dada moment. Okay, that's too harsh. Okay, you went too far. He's not going to have cardiac arrest, but I mean, dude, he's diving into the pool, the deep end, but the deep end's got flames coming out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'll go that far, but it's going to be a damn test. And this is what we've been waiting for him. I feel like that first round is going to be so important just because we're going to see how he's moving. And if he's able to keep that pace that he does based from his NFL background with his quick speed in and out of the breaks, I feel like that's going to be more of a factor than anything, because if he's able to get inside on Volkov and land some good punches, I mean, we've seen Volkov's chin be a little bit questionable in the past. So I have my concerns about that. But I do agree with you that I think Volkov's best path to victory is to keep it on the outside, touch him up from distance, and coast in a 15-minute decision.
Yeah, I just want to remind people that Volkov had won 6 straight before that Derek Lewis fight, including wins over Fabricio Verdum, Roy Nelson. So, yeah, this is going to be hella interesting. Is asthma breathing things legal in Russia?
Jeff Nowitzki actually just sent out a memo that he will not be allowed to use the
inhaler
in this fight.
But you can legally shoot up between rounds. It's Russia, probably, right? You can probably ask a woman to make you a sandwich between rounds or something. Yeah, okay, all right, let's stop now before we get out of control. It's going to be an interesting fight. The rest of that card is look, Abu Bakar Nurmagomedov is going to make his UFC debut. There's a lot of those type of guys on this card. It's going to be interesting. You see your Kayla Harrison's boyfriend, Tony Rocco Martin, is going to go in there as well against a Ramazan guy. All right, yeah. Look, there's a lot of names on here that you're going to struggle to try to pronounce, but I'm sure
there's also Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts is back.
Yes, Ed Herman probably going to get sent to hell by Kadis Ibragimov. It's going to be fun, all right? We're going to see what this happens, how this plays out. I want to close by mentioning there is a Bellator card this weekend, low profile. We're back in Thackerville, folks, for Bellator 233. Fighters by the names of John Salter and Costello Van Steenis will be in the main event. Maybe I'm ignorant, or maybe I just don't know who they are. But our boy King Mo is going to go out on his own terms in this co-main event. King Mo, by the way, who, if you don't know about him...
King Mo's a tough son of a bitch. That guy's all right with me.
Thank you, Chael. We love us some King Mo. He's going to have a retirement bout against 14-6 Andrew Capel in the co-main event. Rashad, you love yourself some Mo Lawal like we do. Can he go out with a win here?
I think so. You know, I got a chance to watch Mo a little bit. And, you know, he's got a highlight video. And one thing I did see, you know, the things that Mo didn't have before returning back. You know, I thought, you know, in watching him spar, his counter striking was back. You know, he wasn't just trying to look for that big shot anymore. He was throwing better combinations and getting out of the pocket defensively responsible. So, and also his level change and that fakes and fangs, that slick style that we've seen way, way back in the day, he's got a little bit of it back. You know, he's lost some weight, and I think, you know, it's allowed him to go out and train as much as he wanted to. And also, I think taking on this role as kind of like a coach-esque type role has allowed him to examine his skill from a different position. So now his analytical mind is better when it comes to executing his techniques. So he's executing his technique a lot better.
Don't mess with King Mo in his home of ATT or his new home of Thackerville on Friday night.
In my home. This is my home right here. This is American Top Team. Don't disrespect me in my home.
Thank you, King Mo. I hope he goes out with a W. Oh, that's the show for this week. Rashad, are you heading off to the motherland?
Dude? I got to run right now. I'm about to be late to the airport, guys.
Going to Rushka.
Yeah, going to Rushka. Wish me Rushka. Wish me, well, I don't know.
Yeah,
wish me
love.
All right, for BC, for B Dubs, for Sugar Rashad Evans, we only got 2 words for you, folks. We out.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.